How do you know that you've had a breach? What do you do after you think you've had a breach? We're going to talk about these topics and get some expert analysis on today's program, MSP Zone.
You are entering the MSP Zone, a podcast for the managed services community, covering news, analysis, and interviews from around the globe. Elevate your MSP game by staying in the MSP Zone. And now, your host, Charles Weaver.
Good day, everyone. Welcome to the MSP Zone. Very exciting program for today. We are going to be joined by a fairly well-known speaker and individual within the managed services community, someone who has a wealth of experience in dealing with not just cybersecurity issues, but actually has some law enforcement credentials to back that up, and might be able to get some stories out of him if he's so willing. And I'm talking about none other than Brent Watkins, special agent with the FBI, retired now, and doing some interesting work now in private sector. But we're very pleased to have Brent join us on the program today. Brent, welcome.
Thanks, Charles. Always a pleasure to speak with you.
Okay, so we've got a lot to cover today, and we're not going to be able to get into the weeds on a lot of these topics, but I think there's a lot of MSPs out there who really have never been through a breach. You know, hopefully that's a lot of them, and some that may have been or think that they might have been, and they just don't know what to do. And there are some, you know, it's the type of thing where until it happens to you, you don't really know what you would do in these situations. But before we get into that, I'd be really curious about your brief perspective on how have cyber attacks evolved, let's say, in your early days of investigating those within the Bureau to today?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, when I first started out in the Bureau, I would go out and give presentations and tell people in the audience, look, people, this internet is going to be important someday. That's how long ago I started doing this, and we all know where that went. So the evolution has really been from very, very simple to very, very complex over, you know, the 20 years that I was doing this in the FBI.
Is it an overstatement to say that the attackers and the methods are becoming more sophisticated, more elaborate, or is it just the technology is changing and the threats change with them?
You know, it's a little of all of that wrapped into one. The threats are definitely changing. Some of the vectors, like, for example, phishing emails, how long have we been hearing about that? And we're going to hear about that in the future for quite a while as well, as one of the ways that attackers gain access to a network. So anyway, some things have changed and some things haven't, but everything is more technologically complex. And those complexities actually open the doors and give attackers more ways to develop malware and things like that to make their job even easier without you finding out, for example, the dreaded zero-day attack.
Yeah, I mean, I want to say one of the big things that we've seen change over the last maybe 15, 20 years is that the MSPs used to say about their customers, right, I don't have customers that have anything that would be of value to anybody. I believe that has changed. Do you believe that mindset has changed or should change today?
I totally believe that mindset should change, because virtually everyone, small business, medium, and large alike, has something that someone can use to get for their financial advantage. I mean, even if you're a small business with 20 people, you no doubt have data, and that data is important. And why is that? Okay, maybe you don't think you have important data, but if you lose that data to ransomware, for example, I think it's going to impact your business in a big way if you don't have secure backups that you can use. So, you know, it affects everybody. I don't care what kind of business you're in.
Yeah, so I completely agree with you, and I think most of the MSPs do as well. The challenge, and maybe it's an educational one, is getting the customers, the organizations, to finally realize that. Let's talk about the this is really difficult. So if you can't give a specific answer, I appreciate it, because it's a challenging one. How do you know if you've been breached? I mean, obviously there's no bloody footprints in the sand and telltale physical evidence. I mean, what are some of the things or tips that you can give us to say, This is how you should find out if you've been breached.
Well, again, you're asking a lot of good questions, Charles. That's a complex answer. I'll try to get to the high points so we don't spend a lot of time on it. But you may not know you're breached for quite a while. I think some of the statistics still show that a breach can occur and you not find out about it for 6 months. You may find out about it from a customer, or you may do auditing, internal auditing, that will tell you that something's going on. Maybe you're a large enough or sophisticated enough business that you're doing threat hunting. You've got an expert that's hunting for the threat, and that can certainly help you discover whether or not you've been breached. You know, back in the, I'll say the good old days, all you had to do was look for data leaving your network at strange times, and you could be pretty well assured you had a breach. It's really not that way anymore. It's a lot more complex, and the attackers, when they're doing what they're doing, are a lot more stealthy about it.
So it sounds like the takeaway is don't expect that gotcha big unveiling of you've been breached. Like your website goes down and there's a, you know, pink fluffy bunny flipping the finger at you and your audience. They're more sophisticated is what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah, that can happen. I mean, something can happen drastic like that and you certainly know you've been breached. But in more cases than not, it's something that's flying under the radar.
Would you say that the commonly accessible or available, you know, like scanning technologies, vulnerability scanning, call them off-the-shelf commercial-grade technologies, are they sufficient or are they a good starting point to, let's say, maybe catch and identify a majority of the breach attempts or breach successful breaches out there?
Yeah, I don't know if I'd say a majority, but the technology has definitely improved off the shelf. And AI is changing that. It's making things off the shelf of technology a lot more effective. But in my opinion, you still need a learned professional in the group. You can have all the machine technology, computer software, AI, and everything else, but you still need someone in the loop to interpret and deal with that. It just doesn't happen by itself.
So for those MSPs listening out there, this is one thing that, you know, you might not be able to just shove off onto a piece of technology. That's what I'm hearing. You're saying that someone with a brain, a human, might actually have to be involved at some level to identify these things as they're happening.
Yeah, in today's world, I think that's absolutely true. Now, does this technology go a long way and make life a lot easier? Of course it does, but you still need a human in the loop. Again, I'm repeating myself. You need a human in the loop to make sure things are operating the way they should be, and that you find out what you need to find out, you interpret it correctly, and you start taking action.
Moving to the different methodologies that we're starting to see, you know, everyone's heard of ransomware. We know that a lot of them are coming in through email-borne phishing attacks and campaigns. The traditional concept I think a lot of people think of is the ransomware locks up the data, it encrypts it. The key to unlock it is in the hands of the bad guy, and the demand for money to release the data back is then made. We're seeing an evolution of that, are we not? And what does that evolution in ransomware look like?
Absolutely, we've seen a tremendous evolution over the years. I remember back in I think it was 2013. I was working on a crypto wall, one of the first ransomware problems that we faced. And it was as simple as, hey, we've got your data, we have your files, we have your pictures, would you like it back? Okay, we need $300 in Bitcoin. And that happened pretty much real time. They did the data, they locked the data up, they contacted you right away, and it was something that happened quickly. Now, over the last, since 2013, over the last almost probably eight or nine years, that's evolved into something that's more like what we call the APT, Advanced Persistent Threat. If you're not familiar with that term, it's just like it sounds. It's an advanced attack. It stays in your network for a long period of time. And what they do is they spend the time, they're patient. They've got a big, big target. They've successfully gotten into that network. They stay stealthy and they look around. They go to every device you have, every computer, every server, and they learn the lay of the land. And they can have access to any files that are on that network. They take their time, they put together a big case, if you will, from their part. Then they let you know, okay, this is what we have. You're in a world of hurt, and now you really have to pay us And it's not going to be $300 like it was back in the crypto wall days. You know, we need about $8 million to give you your data back, maybe a starting point. So that's the evolution right there.
I mean, that sounds like, you know, Paul Newman and Robert Redford and The Sting. That's like the long con. I mean, they're spending what, weeks, months researching and casing the place?
Yeah, days, weeks, months, depends on the crime group you're talking about and how complex the network is. If it's a, if your network and data storage on that network is very complex, it's going to take them a little longer to learn the lay of the land. So that varies quite a bit.
It seems like that also presents many opportunities over that period of time to catch them, right? I mean, you would think that if they're in there, they're working, they're not exfiltrating the data, but they're still in there, they're unauthorized, that would give some opportunity for either the MSP or the organization to say, hey, something's not right.
It's possible, but I believe one of the first things they do when they get in is they take some action to lock up or gather some of your data, encrypt it. That way, if they get caught day one, day two, day three, they still have something to bargain with. You've lost something, they have something to bargain with. So you're not going to go in and remain in your network for 6 months and not accomplish anything along the way.
They've taken something early on. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
They've encrypted something early on and they try to do it. They try to wait because the sooner they encrypt it, the sooner you know about it. But anyway, they have a plan. If something happens like that, they can do the encryption relatively quickly and move on from there to contact you.
So I know there's many different scenarios, so I'm not going to ask you to, pin you down on any one approach, but let's say an MSP has either themselves or their customer has, they suspect there's been a breach. Let's say that there's been a demand for money, for payment. Naturally, they're not going to take credit card, right? So cryptocurrency is one of the chief or the only payment mechanism that is used. Does that mean that everybody should be out there getting a Bitcoin account these days?
You know, what's funny about that? That goes back and forth. People say, no, I'm not going to pay under any circumstances, which I think is a lot of big talk, because until it happens to you, you haven't looked at all the business aspects of it. You don't know if you're really going to pay or not. You know, when you're dealing with it, it's a lot different than standing up and saying, I'm going to take a stand. I'm going to draw a line in the sand and I'm not going to do this. And at some point, DHS and the FBI were saying, don't pay. At some point that changed and they were saying, well, you know, you don't pay if you don't have to, but you know, this is your business. If you're going to go out of business without paying, maybe you want to consider it, but it's your choice, your business decision. And, you know, long ago, I've been telling people, get a Bitcoin account ahead of time. Because if you're not familiar with Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, you don't want to be learning about that in the heat of the battle. That's for sure, because there are many exchanges you can use. There are a lot of subtleties to that. You don't want to be learning about that when you only have a deadline of a day or two to get things done. So again, I recommend getting an account and getting familiar with Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies ahead of time. That's just my personal opinion.
Yeah, no, good advice. So it brings up many questions. We can't get to all of them, but I mean, one of the questions that I think maybe some listeners out there may have is, okay, can you trust someone who is holding your data ransom? I mean, even if you have the money and you said, yeah, I need it back, what are you going to get back? Are you going to get data back that has its own malware embedded in it? Is it going to have, you know, basically, can you trust that you're going to get it back is my question.
Well, that's a complex question. You know, things have changed. The ransomware, for example, that's a computer intrusion. That's not someone just stealing something. They've got access to your network. They can take what they want. They will take sensitive files and threaten to post that on the dark web if you don't pay. A lot of times they'll give you an example. You don't pay, this is the kind of stuff that gets posted on the dark web. No, don't tell me that you don't have money to pay me. I've got all of your financials right here. See this file right here? This tells me you've got $25 million in the bank and you're squawking about giving me a million of that $25 million. You know, I don't want to hear it. I want the money right now. So that's evolved and they've become an intrusion where they steal data and blackmail you that with the individual files with the threat of posting your information, not just encrypting your information. They've stolen it and they could post it if they want to as a bargaining chip.
It, another tough question. I appreciate it. There may not be an easy answer, but is there a situation in which you would say, I don't know if I should pay these guys because I don't know if I can trust them that they're going to give it back? Like, is it just money for them, or is there some way that you would say, well, I really wouldn't pay a ransomware outfit?
Okay, now you're asking hard questions, Charles. The thing is, in the early days of ransomware, some people were paying the money and getting their data back, and some were. It was the wild, wild west. There were so many people doing the crime, you know, and it's evolved into a business that's a lot better organized, a lot better run. And I haven't seen the stats, and you know about stats, you know, they may or may not be accurate, but I think something like 80% in recent history in the last couple of years of the major ransomware attacks, the people have been getting their data decrypted so they could use it again. Now that means there's probably like 15-20% that are not. I don't stand by these numbers. I think they're approximate. And they have a big incentive to give you your data back and to let you decrypt it, because if they have a reputation of not doing what you pay for, people are not going to do it. So that's their business incentive for them to follow through. And does everyone do that? No, unfortunately, they don't. But they do have a business decision on their part to honor what they say they're going to do.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point, which is the hackers are a business as well, right? If they get a reputation of welching on the deal, future people wouldn't pay them. Let's assume the MSP has gone through the motions and they've negotiated whatever the deal is. The Bitcoin has been transferred. The data has come back. Now what? I would be a little bit reluctant to just have this data start circulating through the network again. What guidance would you give to people after the data has been recovered?
Yeah, absolutely. You want to take that data and you want to look at that off network. Of course, you don't want to just reload that onto your network because you don't know really what you've received in addition to your data. Maybe you got just your data back. Maybe you've got all kinds of little back doors that are being planted. But you need to look at it. You need to have a forensics person look at it. Look at it hard to see what there is. And, you know, bottom line is too, you're going to end up having to wipe all your machines to reinstall the data once you feel good about it, because you can't just put it back on a machine. It's already been snooped, if you will, by ransomware and malware. So again, off network, you know, it's, some people don't even store their data off network still, which is amazing. If you store your network or you store your data on a network computer or a server, now that server's still on the network, and it's just not a good idea. You don't even know if you can trust your backups, for gosh sake. That's your best defense, is your backups. And if you're doing it online on the same network, you don't even know if it's been corrupt or not. So it's just a good idea to do it offline as much as you can. Back your storage backed up, and you check your storage for corruption and things like that. It's just key to this whole process. Defense, defense, defense is very important.
Yeah, very good point. Let's talk about a somewhat maybe not sensitive, but contentious issue of, you know, ransomware consultants or negotiators. Maybe that's the wrong term for them, but should MSPs and or their client organizations engage with the hackers by themselves? And this is a two-part question, which is, should you hire consultants like maybe a forensic security person to get involved and assist with the transaction? And this was going to be my next question anyway, law enforcement, right? Like, would you reach out to local FBI and say, I was hacked, you know, can you help me? What would their response be? What are your thoughts?
You know what the first part of your question is? You should have practiced this before. You should have assumed you're going to have a breach, and you need to know what you're going to do, how you're going to handle it, who needs to be involved. I mean, what's the key to that? I mean, I tell people, no pun intended, I pound on the table all the time that people need to have tabletop exercises. You don't want to be engaging your legal people, your public affairs, your IT, and your insurance people for the first time when you're having an incident. You want this practiced. You want to get good at it to know what the process is going to be. As far as bringing in negotiators, I think if you don't have someone that's really top-notch IT savvy, certainly bring someone in. If you're insured, if you have breach insurance, they certainly need to know about it, and they need to be brought in as well to see what's happening as it's happening. So So I don't know about a company. I don't know of any companies that do that specifically. Like that's their job. Call me, we'll negotiate, but you need to have the right people involved. And doing that tabletop exercise is one way to get a handle on that before it happens. Again, just critical to know what you're going to do. Assume this is going to happen to you and know what you're going to do and how you're going to do it and who will be involved. The second part of your question, I think, was law enforcement.
Yeah.
That's always been a big question in the private sector. Why would we bring in law enforcement? Why do we care who did this? I mean, I just want my data. I just want to get them out of my system. I want my network clean. Why do I care about law enforcement? And in my opinion, you do want to bring them in because, for example, every time I've been involved in a case, every FBI case I'm familiar with where we've been brought in, we've always helped in the process. When we're gathering data, we're gathering evidence, we're looking at what happened, we're asking questions. It's always been helpful to the victim and the people trying to recover to see what we're doing and find out what we're, you know, how we're doing it and what kind of questions we're asking. It just helps them get a handle on what happened and how to prevent it from happening again. Now, granted, it is not law enforcement's responsibility to fix your problem, but going through what they do to investigate will help you undoubtedly.
Well, presumably there's a public policy benefit, a virtue of the justice, right? Of actually capturing these characters, these outfits, or at least disrupting them. And I imagine that there are cases where you guys have gone after and caught these guys, correct?
Absolutely, but you know, go ahead and cue the music to Debbie Downer. I mean, there are so many cases out there, and there's so many people doing this. It's almost like that phrase I hate to use sometimes, whack-a-mole. There's just so many of them out there. You know, you can work for 2 years and arrest a crime group somewhere in Europe, in Eastern Europe. And there's something to be said for that. You're making a statement that we're going to work hard to do this. At the same time, realistically, they will be replaced by someone else. So that's kind of a tough question, but I think we all do have some responsibility in that arena because the intelligence we gather can also help prevent this from happening to other victims. So, you know, why do you care? Yeah, you should care because you're doing you're contributing to the common good, if you will. How much you're contributing, I don't know, but you still should go through the motions, in my opinion.
But there's no downside is what I'm hearing, right? There's no downside to calling your local law enforcement, even your local bureau office and saying, look, this happened. I know you're not going to come in and help repair everything, but the justice issue could be, a benefit in and of itself, but there might be advice, right? There might be some, hey, have you thought about this type of guidance that, you know, you saw some things that presumably private sector people haven't, right?
Sure. I mean, that's definitely the plus of bringing them in. You know, back 15 years ago when people started having computer intrusions, they would call law enforcement. Law enforcement would sweep in and say, I'm taking over the network. You know, this is ours now. We're going to take care of this. We're going to look at it. You kind of just back off. And that went over well for about 2 months. And people started complaining. And, you know, the FBI and law enforcement in general, they do a great job now. They've evolved quick. Starting back then, they evolved very quickly into being observers and letting them see what happened and learn about it and gather evidence without really shutting down the business, or it's almost transparent, which I think is obviously a big benefit. You don't have to worry about someone swooping in and saying, okay, I'm in charge, so you do what I say and I have all this, and it's just not going to happen anymore. And I think that was a step in the right direction that happened a long time ago, and it's still the case.
Final question before we let you go, Brent, and really appreciate your time. Do you believe that moving forward, this is everybody is going to be impacted at some point? It's just a question of how well you survive and get through a breach/ransomware event. Is that kind of what we're facing as a future?
I think so, because I have yet to see an organization that has a network that doesn't have vulnerabilities. I don't care how much money and time you become a victim. Absolutely not. But again, it's something that has to be thought about ahead of time. And anyone can be a victim. And if you're not ready, it's how you recover is really going to define your business. It's a cliche, but they say it's not really so much what happens, it's how you recover from it.
Yeah, really, really good advice. That's all we have time for today. Brent, thank you so much for, again, spending your time with us. Hope you can join us in future programs and share your infinite wisdom with us.
I don't know about infinite wisdom. You ask a lot of good questions, and this is a very complex subject. We could have talked for 2 hours about it. But again, I appreciate the invite, and anytime I can be of service to the MSP community, let me know.
Much appreciated. Well, that's all for today's program, folks. Take this to heart. These are not insurmountable things, right? We can get through them, but Brent's words of wisdom are spot on, right? Plan for it, prepare for it, do tabletop exercises, and your chances of surviving and getting through this are markedly better. Until next time, this is Charles Weaver. See you on the next MSP Zone.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, please give us a like. Make sure you are subscribed to the podcast so you will get notified when future episodes are released. We will see you next time in the MSP Zone.